This is a Pinball News production.
Steve Epstein had a family emergency, so he had to fly out. I'm going to sit in here with Roger, and we're going to go over the information this afternoon, of which is titled "Teaching an Old Dog New Tricks: Making a Pinball-Only Arcade Work." Now, to give him a little background on myself, I am an operator in Buffalo, New York. I have a couple locations we'll get into later about, but I also work for Dave & Buster's as a arcade technician. Well, there's I do a lot for Dave & Buster's. But anyway, and then Roger, well, he's just been in the, just sloughing off in the arcade business for, I don't know, the last...
I'm just around.
He's okay. Just around. Yeah. He's always there. But we're going to talk about modern pinball and Steve's location. They're in New York City. As many people remember, Steve had the Broadway Arcade, which closed in 99?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
96?
Thanks, Coy.
So, and then I remember watching a video a little while ago. Steve just looked like he was like, I want to do something.
Well, yeah, there was a video called, I think it was Special One Lit, for those who might have seen it. And Steve was one of the last people that was interviewed, at least in the way that they edited it. And, yeah, he was somewhat forlorn, unfulfilled. Lo and behold, he's been reborn with Modern Pinball NYC at 26th and 3rd. Has anybody been there, by the way?
Okay.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you guys are familiar with it. Other than Koi, anybody ever go to the Broadway Arcade back in the day at 52nd and Broadway? Thanks, Dave. Amazing places. But
we knew there's got to be somebody old enough to be that went there back in the day. Broadway Arcade was an amazing landmark. And at that time, I remember you and Steve talking about Broadway Arcade, where you had a lot of people from Broadway showing up, celebrities and whatnot. Well, that continues right here with Modern. As we see right here on the screen, you will see that here's Ed Roberts from the Bare Naked Ladies. I'm going to start this slideshow. And these are just some of the people that have been visiting the Modern Pinball there in New York. TV celebrities, Ryan Adams, Shannon Shore, of course, SNL's Rachel Dreich. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. And then the rest of the New York population, including the young ones.
Just a montage of things. That's Steve Zeller, who's Steve's partner. They do a lot of things with local schools give them a sense and an understanding of pinball, physics, electricity. You can see there, magnetism, and so on. So they're opening up the games and really kind of taking them through this, you know, wonderful day program, if you will, so that these children can get a better understanding of pinball and at least have a day out.
And actually explain to the kids that when you hit that flipper button, how to turn them on,
right,
and so forth.
And then there's actually those children in the front and that there, they are getting letters of certification,
right.
Certification saying that, yes, they have completed, in quotes, their course for the day.
It's just kind of cool. Kids love getting that. They put it on the refrigerator. Mom and Dad put the certificates on the refrigerator, and guess what? Now Mom and Dad keep seeing pinball on the refrigerator.
Subliminal. Yeah, I think the big thing that Steve does, and maybe it gets to the essence, I guess one quick question. How many of you folks are actually operators?
Okay.
All right, so we have a few. I think the big thing is just to look at it, and Steve and I used to talk about it when we first met and got friendly. I think what Steve understood was that, you know, he was a retail store. You know, the old world famous Broadway Arcade at 52nd and Broadway was nothing more than a retail store, whether it was the nut counter or some of the other things, and all they were doing was selling entertainment. And I think when you start understanding that, then you look at different programs above and beyond the actual products themselves, and you run specials. So he does a lot of parties, a lot of special events, what we just saw with a few of those slides, things with local schools, and so on, to try to bring everybody into a level of greater familiarity and awareness. And, you know, pinball obviously is the key cornerstone to that, but it really is to try to get further entrenched in the community, wherever you might be. If you're a freestanding location, if you're in a mall, work with other retailers. If it's a freestanding location, work with other types of businesses that are in the area. Do outreach, whether it's through police fundraising, fire department fundraising, and so on. And the rewards are really incredible. There you have Steve and Steve and Jack Guarnieri.
And then here was the VIP launch party for The Big Lebowski in New York City. Which is interesting, you know, when we think back at the Broadway Arcade, when you start going there, as you say, retail space, pinball was still illegal.
It was still illegal, yeah.
So
I started going there in 72.
Any machines in there? Maybe Zodiac, something with an auto.
Zodiac and Planets were two games that I remember that were allowed in back in 1972. They were kind of pseudo pinballs. Look at Jay's site because I know that he'll have it listed there on Internet Pinball Database, and you'll see some of the elements, components that were taken out to allow those games in. And then, you know, the byproduct of all of this is what? You publicize yourself. Mm-hmm. News media is always looking for, you know, local interest stories. And I understand over the years one of the issues has always been, and it's been a challenge, is, well, Steve has it easy. He's in New York City. And, you know, I'm only in Duluth. Or I'm only in Madison, Wisconsin, or I'm only, you know, wherever it might be.
What's that? Joliet?
Joliet.
Jailbirds, huh?
And I think the bigger challenge that Steve had was, yeah, I mean, you're in New York City, which is, for many people, the center of the universe, whether it is for media. Dave mentioned before about Broadway. You know, Sarah Jessica Parker, when she took over from Andrea McArdle to headline Annie, as an 11-year-old, used to hang out there. All the Broadway people did. It was near the district for musicians. Mm-hmm. So people like John Hammond, who was responsible for finding Billie Holiday, Bessie Smith, Janis Joplin, and the list goes on and on, Bob Dylan. All these people, you know, made the Broadway Arcade in the old days home. But the point I wanted to say is that, you know, the challenges are much more significant for Steve to get people to pay attention to what he does. So I think that all it is just a question of effort, and here you see some of the places where they have been featured in stories, and this is what the location looks like now. It's a narrow space. There's 30 machines. There's a separate party room, and I think there's a slide on there in the back.
Right. We'll get there. And I also love the you notice the big screens on above the machines? They're running either videos or machines that are being played or tutorials on how to play. And then getting to see the kids standing on
there. Yeah, the big thing with Steve, and if you were here, he would be talking about it significantly, is just children.
That's
how do
future.
You encourage and embrace the whole concept of bringing children into this environment and letting them have an experience that they've never had before, or to reinforce an experience that they've had before? So he takes a lot of pride in the fact that they have been able to do a heck of a lot of birthday parties. They typically book about 3 to 4 on a Saturday, about 3 or 4 on Sundays. And then during the week, it tends to be more adult. I know that we had a couple of days before Steve, unfortunately, had to leave. And while on the golf course, the phone wasn't ever off when he was booking events. Yes, I can fit you in from 2 to 4 o'clock. Does that work for you? Okay, fine. And then the next one was, all right, we have an hour off to clean up and everything else. We can get you in from 6 to 8. But really kind of encouraging that part of the business.
Exactly. And as being a part of the big conglomerate known as Dave & Buster's, you know, there's ticket aspects. This is not ticket. This is all enjoyment. This is not redemption.
There's the party room.
Yep, there's
in
the party
the
room. And he's even got pinball machines back there, it looks like. Isn't that a couple right there on
the
side?
Yeah, there's a couple there, yeah.
So that's always good to have. And you know what? Kids enjoy having fun. If they're winning tickets, and this is my problem with ticket machines, okay? You go to Dave & Buster's, you pay a $50 card or a $20 card, and you play 5 games, and it's over in about 20 minutes. And redemption games, you plunge the ball or you pull the big bass wheel, and it's over in 30 seconds, and you won 50 tickets. Thank you for coming. Pinball. And as I was growing up, my uncle would take me to arcades, and we never would play Redemption. We always played pinball. He's the one that introduced me to pinball. He says, you get your best enjoyment out of pinball because you can play it. And I remember the first game I ever played was Poker Reno.
Wow.
So, and I talked to Steve Kordak about that many times. And just bringing back Steve Kordak for 1 second, how many new time people are here today from the first time at Pinball Expo? Because Steve used to ask that question all the time.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming, and welcome to the family.
Hopefully you're enjoying yourselves.
Yes. Let's continue on with some of these pictures. But just getting the kids back into the enjoyment of pinball, and, you know, it's fun.
The big thing is, look, there's another generation that's coming. There's a heck of a lot of other entertainment options that exist. Short of having games in your home, which is always nice, you know, what are going to be the options for these kids when they get older? And hopefully they'll discover pinball. There's Larry DeMar, a very notable person in the industry. There's an overhead view of what the location looks like.
I'm going to go back two slides here. Hold on 1 second. I want to point out something about Larry DeMar. Now, it's interesting. Larry, you know, how did he get into pinball? Okay. Larry DeMar was friends. His parents were friends with the Gottliebs. So he used to go over to Elvin Gottlieb's house and the Gottlieb kids and play pinball. Now, the man is a very, very intelligent person. You know, he went to MIT.
Yeah, extremely so.
And we probably would have more people on the moon and going to Mars if it wasn't for Larry going to pinball. If he would have went into that, you know, other aspect, he would have been doing, you know, amazing things. Yeah, we would be on Mars.
There
would be
colonized.
There would be pinball machines there would be orbiters on the moon. Okay, so, but Larry is also a great pinball. But there again, he brought people. You know, he was brought up as a young age like these young kids are. Social media plays a big part in promoting any kind of pinball. Facebook. We have a Twitch account going right now that we're streaming for the next two seminars. We have, of course, leagues. Leagues are not, they're bread and butter, you know. Bowling alleys. Do you think bowling alleys wouldn't stay in business if they didn't have a league coming in every night? No. They're waiting on one person to come in and drop $5 or $6 just for one night to bowl. They wouldn't be doing it. That's why the leagues were always big. Instagram. Also, there's other aspects like food banks. Now, you're thinking, what's food banks going to do? That's a way of promoting yourself to the other people. You're giving donations to the food bank. You get a recognition that, you know, they know what's going on. And it works.
And one of the calls that Steve actually took yesterday, I'll share with you, was from Catholic Charities for Children in New York City. And he got some special deals for them to make some donations and encourage them to have some of their activities at Modern Pinball. So, again, it's I think that one of the common bonds that Steve and I had was that we felt a sense of wanting to give back, which is why in the very beginning when we created Papa, there was always a charity that was involved, whether it was Variety Clubs, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Sunshine International, Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, all of that. That's the outside of Modern Pinball.
Let's talk about one quick second. So, because we have a couple operators here, and I want to just point out something here. Now, I saw a turnstile at the beginning of Modern Pinball. Now, I've not been in Modern Pinball, but I believe it's a pay to enter.
Yeah, all right. So there's some zoning restrictions in New York City. That's one of the reasons that Steve, and when I was still living east, we had looked, when Broadway Arcade was closing and there was a hotel that was being built above it, the Novotel, and one of Steve's dad's partners, and a little bit of background, Steve's dad, David Epstein, was in business with Al Simon. These are names that probably mean nothing to most of you. To some of you, maybe they do. Al Simon was one of the major distributors in the East Coast and a major power player in the coin-operated amusement game industry going back to the 30s. Dave Epstein and Al had an arcade on Broad Street in Newark, New Jersey, which is where a young Steve Epstein kind of started. When there was an opportunity to open up in New York, an arcade, again, not pinball, back in the 60s, Steve used to come in after school and whatever else and eventually took over the business. So when when the hotel was opened and Al Simon, who had passed away, his son, had kind of taken over control, he tried opening up a place on 8th and 42nd Street, not the greatest area of New York City at that point in time, looking late 90s. When did Broadway Arcade close, Coy?
96.
All right. Thank you for helping me with my memory. Steve and I had looked at maybe opening up something. He did not want to be involved with that particular location. It was beautifully laid out and everything else. There were a lot of problems just in terms of the caliber of people that were coming in, security, and I won't go on into greater details. Anyway, we had looked at wanting to do things for a period of time before I moved to the Midwest. Interestingly, with all of that, there were zoning restrictions. You could not get pinball in. Now, there were many people that were running games down in the East Village and other places, bars, taverns, and they just figured, what the heck? If they close this up, fine. Steve wanted to do it on a different level. And when he saw all the things that were going on, and we'd been talking about it for a number of years, and he was able to reach an agreement with Steve Zoller, the original intention of Modern Pinball was to be a museum, because a museum had a different type of variance to allow itself in. So to Dave's point and how this all started, and I kind of sidetracked for a minute, but I'll bring it back home, is that the only way that they could do it is the games cannot be on coin play. So if you're in the Chicagoland area, it's basically the same thing. If you go to headquarters, Emporium, Logan, any of those places, normally the games are on free play and you get to spend some extra dollars for the craft beer or food or whatever else. So the accommodation is it's a turnstile. It's based on time, you know, whether it's $15 or $20 for an hour, whatever the case might be. And again, encouraging packages for people if they come in. And they've made a lot of adjustments and modifications just based on people's time. So if you just want to do something for, you know, a period of time during your lunch hour, you're not getting screwed. You're still getting fair value for what you're doing. But that's the reason for why it's been set up the way that it has been.
With that, you can run a lot of specials, coupons, as you see up here on the right now, different places to advertise those specials, Yelp, of course, Time Out. The New Yorker is always a good place. But, yeah, this is modern. This is, and as you can see, they're not the bare bones or empty arcade houses that we all think of. And, of course, we had Gary Stern there with Steve and Steve, and saying pinball is back. So that is a good shot. And then we're done with these guys.
Yeah, I think the big thing, the place has been open almost 2 years. I think next week or so marks the two-year anniversary. I got out to New York for a convention the year before last. So it would have been, this is 14. And I just remember walking in. It was a Monday afternoon. I had just come over from Javits Center. Middle of the afternoon, I walked in, and Steve had shared some pictures with me and whatever else. I did not expect to see what I had seen and to experience what I did. The place was packed. It really was. And it's February, so it's not as if, you know, schools are out or anything else. But there was just a deluge of people. I went back the next night, which was even more crowded. But to walk in and to try to find, is there a game open out of these 30 machines, was just, I mean, it was spectacular. So for those who are ever going to be traveling to New York City, I definitely would say put this on the list along with Central Park or the Statue of Liberty or anything else. It's well worth your time. Even if you don't want to play, just take a look in and see what this is all about, because it is remarkable. And more importantly, I think it is something that can really be a step forward for what the future holds for pinball.
You know, when I got into the hobby in 2000, my wife and I used to like going on dates when we were dating. We used to go play pinball. We got married. We got sensible. We tried to, you know, build a house and, you know, be reasonable. We didn't go out play pinball. Well, 2000 came around, and we went out to play pinball, and they were gone. It was devastating. That's how I got into the club. I bought my first two machines in 2000. I attended my first expo in 2005, so that's now 10 years. It's an addiction. I might want to say, you know, it's been...
A compulsion. I've never liked the word addiction for whatever the connotation is, but it's a compulsion.
Okay.
Obsessive compulsion.
I feel like I have to stand up and say my name is Dave, and it's been 2 weeks since I bought my last machine. But I've known Roger in those few years, and I know that he talked to Steve, and the Broadway Arcade started out, and how he started out the Broadway Arcade, and the two of them worked together. Well, I did that and everything I listened with these two gentlemen in Buffalo, New York at Pocketeer. There was a location, and there was a gentleman that had bought a brand new Star Trek pinball machine because he liked it. I reached out to the group because we had a Buffalo group, and I said, let's support this gentleman. So the first night we had 40 guys just come through the door and play his machine. And he was like, who are you? And they're like, well, we're part of a pinball group, and Dave Fix told us to come on over. The next night, another 40 people, different 40 people, showed up, and they played the machine. And he said, who are you again? Okay. And then he says, you know, I got this soprano machine over there. And he says, yeah, but that's dirty and it's broken. This is a new machine. Well, he hadn't met me, and the group said I had to get over there. So I went over, we sat down, and I said to him, I says, listen, you need to put some more pinballs in here. And I said, you have a niche, a little area, I mean, Buffalo. Needless to say, we started out with six machines. We took his Sopranos and his Simpsons, which were sitting over in the corner and had like one light bulb working, and he was, you know, I shouldn't say one light bulb, but anyway, it was old operator mentality. Here was trying to teach an old dog who's been doing operations. He was the manager of putt-putt golfing games back in the 80s. He has his own route. He has over 50 locations. He has a ton of machines, you know. But it's a mentality that operators have, and we got to kind of get past that. Will a good, clean machine make money? Much more than a broken machine. And that's what you got to try to stress. So he has this was Pocketeer Billiards. It was a pool hall that had 34 pool tables in it. Okay, so we had 8 coin-op tables and almost 28 full-size Brunswick beautiful tables. This is a big location. And unfortunately, it didn't, you know, he wasn't renting the tables out all the time. So I said, let's put the pinballs in. Barring from Roger and them, I said to him, I said, what's your slow times? He says, the month of June, July, and August, we just basically shut down. We don't do nothing. And I said to him, okay, well, we're going to have summer tournaments. And he goes, what's that? I says, we'll pick a Saturday. I'll promote it. Craigslist. Flyers went out to Steve Young, Pinball Life, Marcos. We're going to have a summer series tournament. It's going to be this date in June, this date in July, and this date in August. I said, we got to bring in more machines. He goes, I don't have more machines, so I brought in 10 of mine. Okay, and needless to say, here comes the insanity. So here was the first five. Actually, that NASCAR in the corner is mine. Then I brought the space shuttle and the brake shot. See all that cabinetry on the side? We ended up starting to remove that. And there's the cabinets. It's crazy. Looking back at this, everything you're going to see took place and has happened within 1 year. There's my buddy Barry. I took the cabinets out. Come on, where's the next one? Okay, brought in World Poker Tour. That was my machine. As you can see, we now made more room. Keep going here. Okay, first tournament. June, a Saturday at 12 noon, 82 degrees outside, sunny, beautiful weather. Golf would have been perfect. We had 45 people show up. Albany, 2 hours away. Toronto, 2 hours away. We had people show up from Ohio, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, We had a guy come all the way in from North Carolina. Why? Because we had these machines and we had a tournament. You can actually see Bruce Nightingale right here in this picture. Bruce is a local celebrity kind of in Rochester. He brought a couple machines in. This is his future spa for the day. You know, we had the group together helped out. Keep going. We had all age brackets, old, young, female. I mean, girls play pinball, trust me. We actually have now have more leagues. We have our normal league, we have team leagues, and we have a ladies league. Ladies league of 20 girls, they come in. They have drinks. We have special drink orders for them. We got an Ironman. We kept doing launch parties. We kept promoting pinball. We just kept growing and growing and growing. The bad thing was, as you can see, we have pool tables all sitting there. It's like, boy, you're running out of room. Well, fast forward. Let's keep going here. Here's Walking Dead. That was a release party that we had last year at this time. So these are pictures from last year at this time. Okay, here's my buddy Paul McNamara, a famous pinball player from Virginia. He relocated to Buffalo. He's a great guy. He comes and helps me with set up all the new games. Guess what? This is not, what you're going to see right now, is not a pinball league night. This is not a tournament. The transcending from pinball play to pool play. The arcade, this whole area is just booming. Just where you see these pictures. This is a standard Thursday night at Pocket Tier Billiards, and we had every table taken. All the pin tables were being used. We're taking a location that was very close to, you know, they were ready to shut the doors kind of thing. And we built it up.
That's awesome.
We have a Wizard of Oz. Here's his wife. This is Cindy with Kiss. We have a brand new Kiss Premium. I talked him into it. We moved the tables. We moved four tables. Here we moved the four tables because why? We're going to put in another bank of 20 pinballs machines. So we're going to be at 40. And before I left, we just put these three in, and we just dropped new electrical power in there right there. So here's our current lineup of all our pins. Olds, classics, and so forth. Now, and just to reach out to the operators, we're on CoinOp, okay? Newest pins, I charge $1 a play. I'll pause right there for a second. Older pins, I charge 50 cents. Five games for $2. Dollar bills, acceptors on all the machines. It can be done. You might have to convert some coin doors, but it's worth your money because you get that dollar play better than you do that 50 cent play. You might see right here the one with the dome. That's the getaway. I put that out 2 weeks ago. In 2 weeks, it made $150-some-odd. Okay. It's a classic Steve Ritchie game from the past. Okay. But it's working. This is working. We even brought in a classic 10-strike. This was Barry's 10-strike. It was in the bowling alley. He was pulling in $3 a month off this machine. It's not pinball. But it's classic enough that it's now making $60 to $80 a month. Okay. So you can do stuff like that. Here's 8 Ball Deluxe, and this is the rest of the row. I mean, and then promotion.
That's scary.
It is scary. I like throwing things at you. Some of them.
Thanks. I think the big thing, you know, with Dave, and again, for those who are operators, because I get the question asked all the time, I just can't afford a new game. So buy an older one. I mean, in all honesty, and what Dave is, you know, showing and proving, and it happens everywhere, is older games, if they're maintained and presented in a good fashion at a good value, if you will, whether it's 50 cents per play or whatever else, can earn just as well as a newer game. And more importantly, all it takes is one game to start. Then you can build to two or three, depending on, number one, the space in a location, and if you have somebody that is willing to work with you the way that Dave fortunately has with the owner of this location, suddenly he has transformed dramatically what this location had been, what it was destined, unfortunately, to become, to now being something that I guarantee you is a centerpiece in the entire city.
It is.
People talk about it. They know let's go. This is where we want to be. This is where we want to hang out. Look, the bars of the 70s and 80s, if you will, where young people used to go to potentially meet other young people, whether there was disco music going or whatever else, now those are called barcades. You know, you don't have piped-in music. You have big-screen TVs that are showing sporting events or whatever else, and the whole excuse for being there is to play either vintage video games or new and somewhat less than new pinball machines. And if you can meet somebody like that and have a shared interest, you kind of kicked it off, and you're going to go buy her a beer.
That's right. And she's going to play some pinball. And as we learned earlier today from the New York City guys, they try to promote that, of meeting new people, as it were. What Roger's holding here is a local, I call it a bar rag, but it's called Art Voice. It goes in every bar. They did a whole feature on us here at Pocketeer. I gave it to Roger. Roger read it. He thought it was an amazing article.
That was.
But it was. They produced almost, I think it was 400 or 500,000 copies of this, and it went into every bar. So then all of a sudden we got people coming across. So I did Craigslist ads. I did other ways of media, social media, and it's growing. It's growing like you can't believe.
I think the big point to make for those who are in business, and I know that there was about four or five hands that were raised, because, again, it's a question that I've gotten asked over the years. Well, I don't have the budget. I don't have an advertising department or anybody else doing stuff. This is all free publicity.
Yes.
All you have to do is reach out to local newspaper people, whether it's local sports guy on TV, somebody on radio. All you have to do is just say, hi, I have something special that's coming in, even if it's not. Even if you just bought an 8-Ball Deluxe. Oh, my God, I need to let you know. I just got an 8-Ball Deluxe. You're not going to believe that. Look at Jay's site. Pick up some of the key phrases as to what that game was back in its day. Mm-hmm. Make a big pitch for it and make it seem like it is newsworthy.
Yep.
I mean, I come from the world of publishing way back when. We were always desperate, and whether it's your local newspaper or whatever else, there's always a desperate sense of we have 2 minutes to fill. We have 5 minutes to fill. We have a third of a column in the newspaper or the magazine to fill. All of us have local newspapers, local magazines, whatever the case might be. You reach out to copy editors, associate editors. If it's a city desk, take a look at whatever those sections are that you wind up reading. It can be in the back of the sports section for all I care. It can be in the local news section. If you have a Sunday supplement that gives you entertainment options, here's all the new movies. Here's what's happening at the local clubs. Here's restaurants and restaurant reviews. Those are the people that you want to reach out to just to say, hi, this is who we are. Didn't know if you're familiar with us. Please come by. We're staging something. We've been open for 5 years. Come up with any kind of excuse you can. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, if you beat them up over the head long enough, maybe you'll get somebody to come by, and suddenly, hopefully, whatever you're presenting to them is compelling. And maybe they'll tell other people, and maybe you can set up something where it's a competition between local weathermen, and they're going to play on air to support a charity that you've now been involved with, or a new wing to the children's hospital for the local hospital, whatever the case might be.
Yes.
They love that stuff.
And if you're thinking about doing something for charity, for like children's hospital, talk 30 seconds with the guy from Project Pinball.
Project Pinball, yep.
You're going to get a lot of publicity right there, and I've already talked to him today. Now, just to talk real quick on older games, do you see the space shuttle there? That's like a $700 game, okay? Or it was when I bought it.
I was going to say, if it's $700, I get hammered for what you reprinted up there where I'm talking about. You can buy a new game for, what was it, a couple hundred dollars.
Anyway, I LED'd it out. I cleaned it up. I redid everything, went through this game with a fine-tooth comb. Needless to say, when we put it in location, it started out-earning Avengers. It started out-earning some of the other games that were there. And that's when the operator that I'm doing business, the gentleman, Barry, he got the aha moment that they want it clean and good. Okay? And you know what? We even run I'm going to show you this too. We run, last year we had the, this is Nick Lane, professional pinball player in Buffalo. He's been in Pop and so forth. I wasn't there at the launch party for The Walking Dead, but we made it a costume party. So he dressed up as me. And I sent pictures from Expo, and I didn't know what he was wearing. And needless to say, there we were. I'm in Chicago, and he's here. And now he's, like, telling everybody, oh, yeah, you're dressing in my costume. So that was, you know, flattery is what? You know, people dressing like you and doing stuff. It's just kind of funny. But this is just taking off. So we have a team league now. This, I think, is probably one of the best little things since we've had 4 to 5 people on a team, 2 alternates, two times a month on a Wednesday night. We didn't know how many we were going to get. We ended up getting 10 teams, actually 12 teams, excuse me. And we've been pulling in 60 and more people to Pocketeer 2 times a month. Games are getting played. Clean them, get them, keep them up and working great. But you know what? People walk in, they see this parking lot full, and everybody's playing pinball. It's like, what is this? It transcends. People start coming in. Other people start playing. I'm like, are you part of the league? And they're like, no, we're just having fun. I says, enjoy. You know, it's great.
And I think the big thing is this, and I know that, you know, the title of the seminar was, you know, a pinball arcade.
Yes.
A pinball portion of an overall business is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not dedicated space only to pinball unless you have the luxury of doing that. What I'll also point out is that for many of you who have games in your home and have friends that come over to play your games, there's nothing wrong with trying to get them to come over. And again, it's a question of, you know, wives being understanding or husbands being understanding or children or pets or God only knows what. You don't have the space. You only have 2 games. It's down in the basement or whatever else. But if you're doing some things with your friends and you realize that you have 6, 8, 10 neighbors, friends, or whatever else who love to come by and there's no place in the immediate area to go and play pinball, I'm not suggesting you become an operator necessarily. I'm suggesting you go back to that bar, that tavern, that family place somewhere in the area where you see that there's some space over on the side or space that can be made for a game or two, and you ask that location owner, that manager, whether or not it would be possible for a couple of games to be put in because you have about 10 friends and you'd like to do a league and your 10 friends are going to come in, you know, once a week, Tuesday nights, Wednesday mornings, whatever the case might be, a Sunday, pick whatever the slow times are. You can start developing on your own without any money out of your own pocket other than what it's going to cost you to play to find a new place for you and your friends to play where they don't have to come and destroy your home.
I want to just talk about that for 2 seconds, too. If you think, oh, I don't know anybody, I don't have any friends who have bars or things, try this trick. This works pretty good. Have a party, pinball party. Call the nice pizzeria that you like. And have the owner deliver you the pizza and tell them, hey, stick around for a few minutes and we're going to play some pinball. That pizzeria owner is going to walk in and he's going to see all these machines and he's going to see all these people playing, everybody eating pizza. He's going to say to himself, if I have a machine in my shop, would this happen? And sure enough, they see that aha moment and they say, what's going on? Everybody's here just to play pinball? This is crazy, you know? And you're like, no, it isn't. You can have a percentage of this. It doesn't take an operator or a pizzeria or a restaurant to go.
I'll give you a real-world example for those who might have some familiarity with either of my sons, Zach or Josh. We live in the northwest suburbs out here. It's called Arlington Heights. Josh went to a high school called Buffalo Grove. There was a place, kitty corner from the high school, called Gulo's Pizza, where a lot of the kids would go to have lunch. I think they had one broken down game that was in there off in the corner or whatever else, and Josh and I talked. I used to run and head up the test program at Williams as well as the other stuff that I did. And I was like, all right, let's make it into a test location. So we put in one game, and you know, whatever the era was of game, I don't remember. It had to be a while ago based on how old Josh is now. So we went from something that was probably about $4 or $5 a week at best for kids that were going into play. You wound up having three machines. The average take on those machines was about $280 a week at 50-cent play, because the kids would not only go there for lunch, but they would go there after school to hang out. I mean, he was tripling his business, forgetting about the food, pizza and whatever else. And the only other thing that I wound up suggesting to him was, if you have slow hours, you already know what the high scores are because the games keep them, put some kind of little piece of paper, hopefully a piece of cardboard or whatever else. You can do it with magic marker. I'm not talking about major expense. If you reach this score, you'll get a free soda with a purchase of your pizza. If you do this, you can get a free slice. Whatever it is, do something to incentivize the people to stay longer, because most of them, when you come in, and again, he was serving, you know, slices. If he was running out, you were there. You were a captive audience. I mean, you're okay, well, play while you're waiting your 10 minutes for me to heat up the pizza for you. So, again, incremental money. Guys bring in almost an extra $1,000 a week. For doing what? For doing nothing. For being open-minded enough, because my son was selfish enough to think that in his time for his hour lunch, maybe he could play a couple of games of pinball. So, you know, to Dave's point, yeah, I mean, go out there and see those particular places where potentially you have captive audiences. I don't care if it's a Midas muffler. I don't know how many have ever gone to those kinds of places, but a Pep Boys, typically you're there for a while. I've never gone to one where I've been in and out in 10 minutes. The magazines are usually really old. The TV shows, back in the day, I wasn't interested in watching Oprah. I didn't want to watch any of the soap operas. It would have been nice to have something.
Jerry Springer. You didn't like Jerry? He's from Chicago.
Yeah, really. That was later in the afternoon here in Chicago.
Gotcha.
But, I mean, just talk to the manager there and say hi. You know, I have a friend of mine, or whatever the case might be. Take your own game, as Dave has done. And put it on location and work it on a split. And rotate it out. If you have 6-7 games at home and you don't mind sharing with your friends and whatever else, you can actually make some money off of those without becoming, in quotes, an operator going to multiple sites. But it may lead to that.
And
you
if
never
you,
know.
And if you do it like I did, you make money and you buy more machines.
Yes.
And then you buy more machines. And then you buy more machines. And unfortunately, I try not to tell my wife exactly how many machines I have, but she's getting wind of it. She's, you know, she's not here in the audience today, so I'm safe to talk about it, but she might download it and I might be in trouble. Or Mr. Burke might blow me in if I don't.
I think the big point with all of this, bottom line, pinball is unreplicatable.
Yes.
If we were sitting here and this was a video game convention like Replay FX, what am I going to tell you? Put out video games? I mean, I can play them on almost any device, anywhere, whenever I want, and it's basically the same experience. The screen may be smaller. The way that I'm interacting may be different because I don't have a physical joystick. I have to swipe my finger, whatever the case might be. With pinball, taking nothing away from Farsight and the other guys who have done some remarkable things
right. In
the virtual universe, we're looking at a mechanical device. And because of that, there is some value to it. And, you know, again, whether you have your own private collection and you enjoy it and nobody's ever allowed in your house, that's fine. That's great. That's pretty close to me, other than a couple of times that I've hosted for the Chicagoland Pinball League. But the suggestion here is to kind of look with a broader view as to, you know, what can I do? I'm enjoying this. My friends enjoy it. Is there a way that we can have other people enjoy it? Is there a way that we can make some money off of this as well, which is always a nice byproduct? And by doing that, you are actually going to grow, support, reinforce whatever pinball is today and potentially whatever it can be in the future. I mean, that's what it's all really about.
And just to touch that point really hard, Megatouch went out of business. Megatouch had all these beautiful machines that was on bar counters. Unfortunately, the cell phone apps and games killed Megatouch. I mean, you think about it, why do I put money in a bar counter machine when I can play with it on my phone for free, you know? And that's what really hurt Megatouch, and they went out of business. Mechanical pinball You can't do that. You can't put it on. You can put it on the pin. The most interesting thing is most of these new pinball guys that we get with the leagues, they played it on Xbox and they played it on the different things. And then they think they're the greatest guy, and then they step up to the actual machine, and it doesn't play the same as a computer. And they're like, that shot, I should make that shot. Why can't I make that shot? There's so much going on in the game. To quote Harry Williams, the ball is wild. How are we doing on time, Rob? Are we?
Any questions, by the way?
Real quick.
I know we've been ranting for a while.
Go ahead. We'll go with the operator in the back. Yes, you. No, you with the hat. Yeah. Okay.
Another party in the location, but having your own location. You know, and Steve, obviously, with Modern Pinball, that's what he's got going there. And it sounds like things are going well. I've been there once, and like you said, it was busy. I believe there was a kid's birthday party going on at that point during the day. But I guess I'm wondering more along those lines, the financial aspect of it. And I don't know if that's something you guys are able or willing to delve into.
But sure.
How does he pay his rent there?
Basically.
How much is his rent and how does he pay it?
The amount of rent being in New York City is not going to make sense to anybody because it's going to probably be multiple zeros. And I'm not certain of what it is. I think he's around that about $15,000 to $18,000 a month. We'll see. And if Steve winds up correcting me at some point online or whatever else, that's great. But he's getting it all from people who are coming in and paying for their multiple hours. He's getting it off of parties. I mean, I'll be very honest with you. We played Wednesday and we played Thursday morning before I had to rush into the airport. On Wednesday afternoon, he booked about $2,400 on four different events. Yesterday, I think between the fourth and the sixth hole, for whatever reason, there was another $1,400 that he had done, and six more calls that he had to make, where it was just, all right, fine. I mean, let's just keep going. Having said that, I think that the multiples are really insignificant. How is Steve doing it? I know that he has a location that he has worked out with Alan Chichak. Where Alan provides many of the games. I know that he has a relationship now that he's built with Gary to get some of the new games in as a test location. The same thing now I think that he's trying to work out with Jack. So there are ways to do it where your out-of-pocket expense isn't necessarily your total out-of-pocket expense. If you want to buy the games and service and everything else, Steve has three full-time technicians. I mean, it's a costly endeavor to keep that business going to the standards that Steve set way back with the Broadway Arcade, so that every game functions, every game is clean. You know, beginning of the day, they get beat up a heck of a lot, let's face it, because of the amount of traffic. So where do you guys live? Okay, well, I mean, geez, Minneapolis is a hotbed for pinball. I mean, it really is. There's a lot of different bars and places that have games that I'm familiar with. Haven't been there personally, but I think that you can find a place and try to work with that location owner to say, you know, I'm either going to place it or work with somebody, whether it's through local distributor or whatever else, and say, you know, let's go in as partners. I think that Steve has actually started working a little bit with Trent to get games. So I don't know if that answers the question totally, but
and I'll just touch on that too real quick for CoinDrop. In Buffalo, where we have ours, I'm not going to give you specifics, but I'll just give you the last month. We made about $3,800 just on the coin drop of the pinball machines. So that's a good little chunk of change, and the rent isn't $3,800, and we have all those pool tables. So guess what? That's coming in, and it's paying off. You know.
Did you have a follow up?
Yeah.
Oh no, I was just going to say. I mean, in a location like that where they're really not selling anything else, they don't have. Beverage like Modern Pinball, it's just that's impressive that they're able to, you know, book events and get the traffic flow. Just
when the place was designed, let's face it, you don't have a lot of footage. The part that was most appealing was, oh, we have this back area, I can turn it into an office or I can make it into a party room. Let's make it into a party room, and the office, there's another little small closet, if you will.
Closet. That has become, say closet.
That has become somewhat of the office. But again, I mean, it's thinking outside the box and saying, all right, how do I maximize the space that I have? Whether it's dedicated space or shared space with another business. Yeah. Dave, I think you had a question, and I don't know if there are any others, and then we have to wrap up.
Okay, this is probably mostly for Dave Fix. So without getting into specifics again, so you're working with a guy, sort of an operator-location relationship, and you're splitting the coin drop in some way?
Yeah.
Do you think that that's... You can just do a straight linear split? It seems like you have to do some kind of a special deal, like something that you get more up on the top, as it goes higher and higher,
like 60-40.
To and, you know, start giving him a lot on the low end and you more on the high end, so that you get money to invest more in the games. And really, you're changing the personality of his location. So it takes a certain kind of location to go for a deal, and it seems like you have to be kind of flexible with the split ratio adjusting as you get to higher and higher revenues.
I'm just going to use it this term. When you get greedy, you kill things.
Yeah.
So I do a 50-50 split, and with him as an operator also, I deal with him because I have a ton of contacts with different pinball part companies, and then I get him deals, and he gets me deals. And the two of us feed back and forth. And he comes over to Dave and Buster's and picks my brain, and I go over and pick, you know, we have a like a good relationship here. And he has also lend me room in his warehouse to store some games if I need to. You know, we have a good little relationship. But like I said, if we get money hungry, you're not going to have that, you know.
So if you were talking for other people in the room who might want to do that,
right?
The lesson might be, get really close to this guy you're working with, the person who has the space, and make a big list of, here's all the different things I could possibly do for you, here's all the different things you could possibly do for me, and make a larger deal than just money. That sounds like the lesson there.
Yeah, and work together. Because you know what, if you work together as friends, you build something and it grows for a long time. If you get, when it comes down to money and tightness, you know, he could go out and buy all the pinball machines. You know, he could buy the space shuttles and all the rest of the stuff and put them in himself and be done with it, you know, and then kick me right to the curb, you know, that kind of thing. But he's not going to do that because between me and him, he's always busy doing 50, you know, he's got 50 locations. And so if pinball machine breaks down, guess what? It might be his. I'm fixing it for him. And if mine breaks down and I'm here in Chicago, guess what? He's fixing mine. Because we're both together, and we're trying to make this. It goes back to that movie, Build It, and They Will Come. I think we have one more quick question.
This is also sort of a follow-up to your question.
Okay.
I would not recommend opening a pinball-only arcade if you don't plan to expand to other things, especially alcohol. I have a place in Joliet, which is 40 miles from here approximately. We've been open since July of last year, and before I opened my place, I knew we were going to have alcohol to make it work. But it's been one roadblock after another with the city and the state. And, you know, people love us. We have a great social media presence. We have 4.9 out of 5 on Google, on TripAdvisor, on Facebook. We just cannot get people to come back on a regular basis except for, you know, our diehard people. And we're doing a little bit better. We're booking more parties now. People know we're out there. Mm-hmm. But you have to have something else in mind if it's your own location. And the deal we have right now is we have minimal rent. That's the only way we're existing.
You doing leagues at all?
Yeah.
Trying to start one.
So have you reached out to, what is it, Chicago Mafia or Chicagoland Pinball League?
No, I've talked to people in the area that live, like, in Will County where there's no presence at all. Like, in Manhattan, there's, like, at least 6 people there that want to start a league. But I have not talked with anybody else in other leagues that are more based in this area. People are probably not going to travel 50 miles to play.
You'd be surprised. There's a guy in Chicagoland Pinball League, Kevin Ziegler, who comes in from Indiana. So I think that if you can reach out to the community at large, work through Josh, you know, an IFPA pinball, if you haven't gone to that site.
And oh, yeah. I tried to get Josh to call. He hasn't been there yet. We've been open over a year. So.
Well, that's because of Colin and Charlotte.
I know. I understand.
But what's the name of the place?
Chicago Street Pinball Arcade.
It's the first I've ever heard of it. So for some reason, and I don't go online a lot or whatever else, so my apologies for being an old fart. But
no, it's okay. We just had a review on Martin's site on pinballnews.com.
Okay.
So that's like headlining on there right now, or was a few days ago at least.
No, I mean, it'd be great to know about these places and, you know, whatever way that you can, and to be able to share it, and hopefully you can build a business off of it.
Yeah, we have 37 pinball machines and a bunch of arcade games. We actually have more pinball than any other barcades in Chicago right now.
Okay.
So we have a presence. It's just not good enough yet. I know it needs alcohol to make it work, at least when I'm owning the location. I also operate games downstate in Champaign.
Okay.
So.
Well, let me touch base with that one real quick, too. Pinball Life. Steve Young, Pinball Resource, Marcos. Take an 8.5 by sheet thing, put 2 flyers on it, cut it in half. Send them 500. They will literally, every order going out, free of charge, that flyer will be in there. Now all of a sudden you have every pinball person that you didn't even know you had who's ordering parts from Pinball Life. He could be down the street and didn't even know you're there. He's now got a flyer and goes, oh, hey, this is in my back neighborhood. I've had so many people show up at Pocketeer, people that I've been working in the community for over 10 years fixing machines. I didn't even know they had machines.
I'll even add to what Dave is saying, not to jump on him, but because he just made a great thing. If you can do that little piece of paper and you put something on there that's a coupon saying come in and I'm going to give you a buck off, free games or whatever else, you have a way to track how many people have come in. You've now generated some business because you're giving them $5. Whatever it is, you're giving them $1. You're giving them some free games, whether you're on Token Play or whatever else here. Here's some quarters from the back.
No, those are great ideas. We have some of those passed out as flyers with little tear-offs. We do just admission, $10 again. You can play all night. So we have 2 for $15 tear-offs posted at various places. I've talked with Mark at Marco.
But do that.
Yeah. Put it at Pinball Life and all the rest, and you'll be amazed who will start showing up at your door with those coupons. And I usually just do it black and white on a color piece of paper. It's cheap.
And I'll even drive down toward Joliet. That's where my daughter-in-law's family is, on the southwest suburb. So,
so you didn't know anything
about you guys.
You're going to do what I can't do. I haven't gotten Roger at my shop yet. I've been trying to get him over to Pocketeer. He comes in to talk to Ice every once in a while. And one of these days, he's going to come over to my place.
My next trip there.
Okay. All right. How are we doing on time?
We're good. 5 minutes.
5 minutes? We got another question over here? So wait for the mic.
Wait for a voice.
Yep.
Just one quick question. I was just wondering about, I saw in there, it looked like there was like a field trip from a school.
Yes. That's what it was.
I was just wondering, how hard is it to work with the schooling system to accomplish that?
You actually go to individual teachers, whatever the coursework might be. They're always looking for outings.
Yeah.
You have to pick the right age range. So you're looking at grammar school, probably like, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th graders. You can go a little bit younger, depending. But again, they're always looking for activities. Some of it is done through local community centers, whether it's through the church, local YMCA. They're always looking for those types of activities. You just want to make certain that as young as you go, understand that at least you can keep their attention. I mean, it's the same thing if any of you have children as they're growing up. Why are they going to the zoo that day? Well, there's an outing. Hi, I need $5, and we'd like to have however many parents come by to chaperone and keep things going. But, you know, I think that is probably the best approach to take, is to go through schools, go through churches and your other community centers, and just see, you know, do they want to put something on the calendar that you can make it available for them.
I love this picture. I just went back to it. Here's Steve showing the inside of a machine. You ever open a pinball machine in front of a kid, he's like just floored. Like,
well, look at the little boy on the left side.
And then the girl with her camera taking a picture of the inside of the machine. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, I always love opening a machine at people's houses. They're like, that opens up? How did you work on that? You know, that kind of a thing. I had a customer who actually ripped out the bottom of the game just to fix it because he didn't know it unlatched and opened. And then when I opened it, his wife just went, I'm going to kill you later. Thank you.
Yeah, one last one, I guess.
Go ahead.
You're there?
One.
Anybody?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Thanks, guys.
Are we done?
I think we're done.
All right. Hey, real quick. For you to hear some of the greatest history that goes back to the 1970s and talk about Pinball, the book, the unpublished story, this is a little plug for tonight. Roger and I will be back up here. We're going to see some slides that haven't been seen in 40 years.
Never been seen.
Pinball the book. had 5,000 slides shot for the book. Only 300 ever went in the book, so there's 4,700 that never did. And we're going to talk about the history of pinball in the 70s, why, like the Broadway Arcade, how it didn't have that, how Roger went in front of the New York City board. You know, all that history. That'll be tonight at 7:30. So,
drunk history, absolutely.
You know, one thing.
I'll bring something other than tea, I guess. I don't know.
No, we'll just load the tea with some vodka. We'll be fine.
You know, the one thing I want to say is I knew Roger prior to Expo even happening, and he is such an incredible supporter of all pinball, not only Expo, but pinball tournaments, pinball this, pinball that. And for the women out there, this young man, Roger, used to be with Esquire. So, I mean, he knows his way around town. He knows about all us people.
GQ Magazine.
So for the guys who want to know, have some fashion tips, see Roger afterwards.
Right.
But he's also a great pinball advocate, and we're just lucky to have him here. And you really have got to be there tonight, like Dave says, to hear about the early stories of pinball exclamation point.
And
it is the untold story I will share with everybody. And I'll say it again tonight, but very quickly, because I don't want to run into anybody else's time. As Josh said, the few times that I've actually now begun to talk at these kinds of events after many years of not doing so. So it's the first time I know that you've actually ever really planned anything out and scripted it. You've always just kind of winged it, and it's like, yep, this time. The book almost didn't happen, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit. I'm going to give you a chronology of what was going on at the time, not only with the book, but I think also just the prevailing times, both domestically as well as internationally. So hopefully it's of some level of curiosity. If not, enjoy the rest of the show. What Rob and Mike and Dave and the rest of the troops have done is really remarkable. I take my hat off to them. 31 years, it only gets better and better. So thanks again, everybody.